To be from the Midwest is to be sincere, civic-minded, unboastful, and subtle, even in one's rage. So says our guest this hour in a recent piece he wrote called Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about the sincere pros and perhaps the repressive cons of Midwest Nice during this hour. And we'll welcome your observations. What does Midwest Nice mean to you? Do you recognize that personality trait or way of life in yourself or in others? What does it mean to you? And do you think that there's a dark side to it as well? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Paul Kix is a senior editor at ESPN The Magazine, and he has also written for New York Men's Journal, The Wall Street Journal. He wrote a piece for Thrillist, which was called Midwest Nice, or Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. He grew up in Iowa. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what drew you to write this piece about Midwest Nice?
Well, a buddy of mine, Joe, who's an editor at Thrillist, we've known each other since I was working and living in Boston, and I had just finished writing a book, and it was a little bit of time before I got the edits back from my editor, and Joe said, you know, why don't you do something for me? And he said, I always wanted to understand what Midwestern Nice meant. And I said, oh, I think I could do that. So that sort of set it in motion. We talked a little bit about it by email, had a phone call, and then I started writing.
Oh, well, so what is Midwest Nice? How do you define it?
I think it is, I describe it in the piece as something like the most sincere, malicious, enriching, and suffocating form of behaviors known to man, and I think that anybody from the amazing thing to me, I grew up in Iowa, spent the first 22 years of my life there, and in the last 12 or 13 have lived outside the Midwest, and I began to pick up on the Midwest's idiosyncrasies and really compare and contrast them only when I lived outside, first in Texas and then on the East Coast. And began to really just value them more than anything else. I mean, I have three small kids now myself, and there's a part of me that sort of bemoans the fact that I won't be living in the Midwest anytime soon, and so my kids won't be exposed to some of just really the values of the Midwest. At the same time, there are things that I found kind of repressive about growing up where I grew up.
Yeah, well,
bit of give and take.
Let's talk a little bit about the repressive or suffocating. you said that they were the most sincere, malicious, enriching, and suffocating set of behaviors in the English-speaking world. why is it suffocating? Why is it malicious?
Well, so let's deal with each term. Suffocating, because there is a way, as I say in the story, I really believe this is the case, and I'm actually doing it right now. Midwesterners have a really hard time speaking blunt honesties about anything, right? Like we are taught to be nice. We are taught to think of others. These are great, great things. At the same time, because we are always trying to couch everything, there is a sort of hidden language that emerges, and I discuss this a little bit in the story as well, but that hidden language, unless you really are savvy enough to pick up on it, and I wasn't until I was about, 18 to 20 years old, it's instead just sort of everything is repressed, every emotion is repressed, and so that's sort of the suffocating part of it. Because we aren't able to speak in each other in ways in which we honestly feel. And the maliciousness is sort of along those same lines. I mean, when you aren't able to be as honest and forthright with people as you want, there is a sort of double talk that you engage in, And, you know, sometimes I've just come to believe the downside of living in the Midwest is, I think, that when you're not honest with people, you know, that honesty, that doesn't really come through. And so it isn't almost this, you don't see this level of transparency, right? When you don't have that level of transparency, well, sometimes it's not really good for anybody. So in the years since I've lived outside the Midwest, I found myself sort of almost liking, as I said in the story, that there was an almost abrasive honesty to the Northeast, and a part of me now actually favors that. Though at the same time, and this is the thing too, I will defend till my death the Midwest because I love it so much, and I value everything about it. So I, if you haven't picked up on it yet, I have a lot of conflicting feelings about the Midwest.
Yeah, well, no, and you say it's also, I wanted to talk a little bit about how Midwest nice compares to other parts of the country, and you mentioned the honesty, abrasive honesty of the Northeast. You also write, it isn't the feigned kindness of the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's a subtle distinction because, you know, like what I was just saying about double talk in the Midwest is true, but I think at its heart, Midwesterners want, it just comes back to the same idea, Midwesterners always want to treat each other well. You know, Midwesterners have good intentions. I believe, as I say in the story, that perhaps it has something to do with just the largely Scandinavian and German Protestants who settled, you know, great swaths of the Midwest, in particular where I grew up in rural Iowa. You know, everybody had either a German or some Norwegian name. And I believe that those people were, you know, there's some reason to believe that those people were very much faithful Protestants. They were very much living by the golden rule. And I at least think that, you know, maybe some of that was passed down. And so that's why you see all of these communities that are guided by good, virtuous values. So yeah, I mean, it's not, that is at the heart of the Midwest. My wife, who's from Texas, I love her, of course, and I love certain parts of Texas. And I've visited, you know, I have a lot of friends at ESPN who live in the South, and so I've spent a fair amount of time down there. But there is something that is, to use the word again, malicious about the South in particular, because I've noticed in a lot of encounters, there really isn't much difficulty, and as soon as someone turns your back, just immediately start railing on them, you know? So, and there really aren't any qualms about doing that. It's almost like a form of social interaction, you could say. It's what you say to someone's face, and then it's the fun you can have when that person has turned his or her back. And it sometimes is a lot of fun too, you know, to listen to that, to even partake in it. But that, as a good Midwestern boy, I always kind of shake my head at that, like, oh no, that's not really the right thing to do.
You spend a lot in the piece looking at the movie and TV show Fargo, which has many examples of Minnesotans embodying Midwest nice. And I wish we were going to pull a clip, and then I didn't. But talk some about why you think this Fargo is such a good example of Midwest nice.
Well, so, you know, actually, when you asked why I wrote this, in part it's because the national media's portrayal of the Midwest is us as I use the phrase, like, bovine-like in the story, you know, and we're just viewed as big, dull, flown over, pig-eating people, right? But the reality is there is so much subtlety in what we say, and as I say in the story, what we fail to say, what we half say, the euphemisms we create, the innuendos, the eye rolls, all the rest, and time after time, whether it's in print, whether it's in a book, whether it's especially on the small screen or the silver screen, they get it wrong, except for, first and foremost, the Coen Brothers movie, which is perhaps my absolute favorite of all time, and then Fargo, the TV show, which is sort of, I see as sort of a spiritual descendant of the original. And what they get right is just like, I spent a little bit of time in the story just discussing this very small encounter in the TV show in the first season of the first episode of the new season. And it's just this small exchange between a truck driver and the police officer, but they nail it because it's just about capturing, you know, like this nervous earnestness, and capturing the sort of, the deferential greetings, the nervous earnestness. I say in the story, like trying to fill small moments, even grisly ones, with chatter of some sort, and then trying to, you know, pay a respect or even cloak anything that is untoward or, you know, kind of grisly. Like there's a murder there. Someone was murdered, and so he put his coat over her because he thought it was the appropriate thing to do, even though in actuality it might have actually ruined some crime scene evidence. Anyway, it's a small example of, you see it time and time again, and I make a point of it in the story to talk about the movie, because the movie, I think, is just like every single scene. The Coen brothers completely nail, to my mind, what it's like to be from the upper planes. I mean, they capture all the subtlety, all the nuance, and really all the intelligence. And that's what I really value, because so many times, again, in Hollywood, you see us as just being flown over dull people. I just don't think that's the case. And that's why I love Fargo more than anything else, for its intelligence.
You know, it's interesting because I remember growing up in Wisconsin, I'm from Wisconsin, hearing Minnesota nice and not so much Wisconsin nice. Did we just kind of co-op this and say it's the whole Midwest?
I'm co-oping it because I don't think there's much of a distinction. I mean, you know, growing up in Iowa, I spent, my mom had a very good friend in the Twin Cities. We spent a lot of time in Minnesota. We would make almost, you know, a yearly pilgrimage to Milwaukee because we had some old neighbors who were there. The same sort of thing we do in Illinois to go, because my grandpa grew up a Cubs fan because you know the AAA affiliates in Des Moines, and so we would go to Wrigley a lot. And there is something that is, I mean, yeah, it's called Minnesota nice, but I'm kind of saying no, it's much bigger than that. And the response online, there seem to have been a lot of people living in the Midwest now, or having grown up in the Midwest and move outside it, like me, who feel as I do, that yeah, there's something region wide, a set of behaviors that we all live by.
Yeah, I agree. You got that right. That's a Midwest nice way to say it, isn't it? Paul Kix is senior editor at ESPN, the magazine, and we are talking with him about a piece that he wrote for Thrillist called Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. So do you think it's suffocating in any way, or do you think it's mostly good? We're looking at the pros and the cons of Midwest Nice and welcoming your observations at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Paul Kix, who wrote the piece Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. We have posted his piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and we are talking with him and with you about the sincere pros and the repressive cons of Midwest Nice. And we wonder what Midwest Nice means to you, or how you recognize this personality trait or way of life. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our lines are full. Let's go to Thomas in Ashland first. Hi, Thomas.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi there. I just wanted to relate a quick story, or a frequently occurring one. I'm from Minnesota and I live in Wisconsin, and people in Wisconsin yell me about this, so this is where there might be some sort of distinction between Minnesota and Wisconsin nice. That growing up at Thanksgiving or Christmas, you have a tray of brownies, a tray of bars, and there's one left, and then you would never take the whole thing because that would be too rude. Half of it. And then you have half a brownie, and somebody takes half of that, and you end up with a 16th, 32nd, 64th, 128th of a brownie that eventually ends up going stale, and you throw it away. So it ends up being a bit wasteful. And people yell at me about that in Wisconsin. They just take it like they're from the East Coast or something.
That is hilarious. No, Thomas,
the part of Wisconsin I'm in, but
that's not Wisconsin. That's Iowa too. I mean, that's completely something I grew up with too.
Really? No, wait a minute. Because I was going to say here at work, even people will cut that last cookie in half and leave an eighth of a cookie on a tray in the lounge. You know,
Minnesota's dumpsters are full of eighths of cookies and tiny slices of cake that you can see through. And
that is funny. But in Ashland, you say people just chow down that cookie, or?
Yeah, I think people kind of just go for it up here. I'm not really sure why.
That's hilarious, though. But I think you brought up an example from a Prairie Home Companion about this, didn't you, Paul, in your piece? Or am I imagining
things?
Well,
I think that Garrison Keillor certainly profited from the idea of what Midwestern nice is. There's no doubt about it. You know, I would even say I'm not a huge fan of his show. There's just something about his voice that I don't like. But, you know, he captures as well, I think, the subtlety. My parents, my mom in particular, a huge NPR listener, love Keillor's show. But I just never got into it. I will say, however, the times I've listened to it, if I could add sort of one addendum here, it would be that not just Fargo, but Keillor's show captures all of what it means to live in the Midwest.
You know, here's where I saw that, of all things. It was on our Facebook page. Marty on Facebook writes, I remember a Garrison Keillor News from Lake Wobegon segment talking about Minnesota nice and how you never accept neighborly hospitality unless it's been offered three times. How about a piece of pie is the question. Oh, no, I can't stay. Maybe a little vanilla ice cream on it, too. No, really, I have to go. Let me start the coffee. Okay, but just one piece. That is hilarious. Now, did you say in Iowa you would grab that whole cookie?
No. Yeah. It would be, I hate to be the one to say this, but that happened in Iowa, but routinely at work at ESPN, so, you know, ESPN's based in Connecticut, around the holidays, people will bring in a whole bunch of bars or cakes or whatever, and East Coasters do this as well. Now, if I could make a distinction, I would bet it's because East Coasters are watching what they eat, and so they want to divide up that last piece. I see this time and time again where East Coasters are just like, oh, no, just give me half of that or half of that. Right. I think we're back home. It's when what's so funny about that is that, like, nobody has a problem until the last piece. Everybody's like, oh, I'll just have a piece, that's fine, that's great. But only when it's the last piece do you start to see the division. The eighth, the 16th, the 32nd, the 64th. That's exactly true. I grew up seeing that a lot.
Thomas, that was a great observation. Thank you so much. Roberta in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Roberta.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say that your guest is spot on. I grew up in Central Tier, New York, and then migrated out to the Midwest for school, back to New York for more school, lived in the South for a couple years, and then have lived in the Milwaukee area for 26 years. And I found that my New York bluntness kind of scared people when I first came here. And when a bunch of us Northeasterners kind of run into each other, the first thing new people ask me is, what do you think about how the Midwesterners relate? And I said, well, there's a certain Midwest, I guess I call it a passive aggressive.
Yeah.
I said, but it's great. They're sincere. And I also say, and it's not, like you say, the feigned honesty of the South. It's sincere. And I've lived here for 26 years, and I love it, and I've grown used to it, and I think they've grown used to me, and it's a great place to live.
Wonderful. Well, where's that aggressiveness, though, Roberta?
What's that?
Where's the passive-aggressive, the aggressive part
Well, I guess it's what he's talking about, the malicious suffocating, where they're so passive, but then it all sort of bottles up inside.
Yeah, there's this great...
That.
Yeah. So there's a book I actually cited in the piece. There's a book by this Des Moines retailer called I'm going to botch it. But it's if you go on the Facebook page of the show, you'll see the piece. But it's something like Midwest: God's Gift to Planet Earth. And in it, he lays out these scenarios of passive aggression, passive aggressiveness in different parts of the country. And he says that in the Northeast, in say a Jewish mother on Long Island will will say something along the lines of, oh, you know, you're only home three nights and you're going to go out. I guess that's fine because you're Mr. Popular and you'll leave your poor old mother here at home. And he said a Southern, and then the, he said a Southern Baptist woman might bring, a Southern Baptist mother might bring God into the equation. You know, oh, well, you know, I don't know that this, if you're going to go out, leave me here. I don't know if it's the best Christian thing for you to be acting that way with these sort of heathens, you know. A Midwestern mother, and this is so true, I saw this over and over again with my own mom, a Midwestern mother will just say, going out? You sure? And that's the passive aggression. So there's actually one other thing I cite in the story. I was talking with my mom about this afterwards. When I was a junior in college, I grew my hair out, and it was a... It was a terrible idea to do it, but I did it anyway. And when I called my mom with the news, I said, Mom, I'm growing my hair out. And she said, oh, but it sounded, there was an O, and then it sort of was a second beat of O, and then the O ended in more a statement than it did a question. So it was, oh. And that's all she said. But in that one word, I knew exactly what she meant. She was not happy that I was doing this. And that's the... To tie back to what we were saying in the last segment, like, that's the subtlety of the Midwest, that's the passive aggression of the Midwest, and because Midwesterners can pick up on that subtlety and on that passive aggression, that's also the intelligence of the Midwest, because I see increasingly living out here that because you sort of never escape the passive aggression, right? It's like stays with you for your whole life. So I say this in the story too, much as it pained me, I insulted a neighbor of mine in Connecticut a couple weeks ago, and she actually took it as a compliment. She had no idea what I was actually saying. You know, this is something that you see, I think that you see routinely. You know, some of the biggest entertainers in Hollywood, some of my favorite writers, some of the sharpest thinkers come from the Midwest, and they're able to relay that subtlety and the endless iterations of any one moment, the conflicting truths of that moment. They're able to relay that so very well in their chosen field, and I think it's some part it's a reflection of having grown up in the Midwest.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Paul Kix, who is a senior editor at ESPN the magazine, and he wrote a piece called Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. And we're talking about Midwest Nice. What does it look like to you? Do you see pros and cons to what is called Midwest Nice? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Larry in Sheboygan is with us. Hello, Larry.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've been surfing here on the Great Lakes for over 47 years, and I've surfed all over the U.S., and people are amazed at how open and sharing we are. You go any other place, Makaha, Hawaii, or a lot of the places, California, Trestle, Santa Cruz, Wind and Sea, you'll get kicked out of the water, you'll get yelled at, your car will get keyed, your tires will be flat, and who are you? What are you doing here? Why are you surfing our waves? But here, on the Great Lakes, and especially in Wisconsin, it's, hey, come join us, paddle out, tell everybody where you're from. They'll share waves with you. You're going to have to drink beers with us when you're done. And
That's right. He said surfing, Paul, but there is some surfing going on in the
sure,
Great Lakes.
Sure.
So, what about that? Just we're open and sharing more so than the rest of the country?
I think so. I mean, my wife from the South would probably have some words for me for agreeing with you, but I think that's true. I was saying in the last segment that part of the thing I'm really missing about not raising my kids in the Midwest is that exactly the openness and friendliness of really the whole region. I don't know that it's particular to Wisconsin. If you think so, perhaps. But at least, you know, everywhere in Iowa, again, anytime we would go up to the Twin Cities, this seemed to be a sort of uniformed reaction, an openness and an invitation to come sit down. That's one of the things that I really love about the Midwest.
Carrie emails, my mom just chastised me, I'm 53, about not being friendly when we get into an elevator at her senior high rise in Minnesota. It drives me crazy. She will stop and greet each person in the hallway. Arg, there's got to be a limit to my niceness, and I think I found it. Well, that's interesting. You know, mother-daughter, and there's a difference in Midwest nice.
Yeah, that's actually, so I'm with that emailer. Like, there's a certain times where I do just want to just, we don't need to have a whole encounter. Let's just, you don't even need to really acknowledge the other person. They're just somebody you met in an elevator. You don't need to necessarily strike up a conversation.
No, so are you still personally Midwest nice, or have you developed that East Coast abrasive honesty?
I'm sort of a blend, I think. When I go home, it is, well, of course, you sort of, I default to the way that my parents, my aunts and uncles, my sister, one of my sisters still lives in the Midwest, I default to that. There is, out here, though, I sort of embrace the bluntness, because I think it is really a better way. Out here, it's really the only way to interact. I mean, you don't really get much if you're not being truthful, especially, I think, in a work environment. Less so, you know, I should say when I have over people, my neighbors, when I'm grilling or something on the weekend, then it's a different sort of encounter. But I think professionally, at least, yeah, mm-hmm. I have unfortunately changed.
Aaron in Hartford is with us now. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how are you, Joy?
I'm very good. You have a story for us, I understand.
I do, and I have to say, I read Paul's article on Facebook last week. Several of my Midwestern friends had shared it, and I thought it was great. I am born and raised in Wisconsin, in this area, the Holy Hill area, and I moved out east in 2001 and lived out there for 10 years. So I have a lot of friends and family out in Jersey City and Hoboken, New Jersey. My sister and her husband still live out there. But anyways, on Facebook last week, one of my dear old friends still out in Hoboken wrote me this post, and she said, Peggy and I were out for 4 hours building scarecrows, you know, outside the gate and working feverishly, and no one stopped to say one thing about great job or those look great or happy Halloween. And then this nice family stopped, and the woman said, well, these scarecrows look wonderful. And my friend Dorothy said, you must be from the Midwest. And she said, yep, I'm from Wisconsin.
Oh, how great that is.
And she sent me this little message, and it was just such a, you know, I do think there's something, living out there out east also, I do think there's something about Midwestern nice, and you're just a little more approachable. Although, with all that said, I have people in the Midwest who said, I can't believe you lived out there, and I had great experiences out east. I never felt, you know, slighted or anything. But I think there's something a little bit more open or approachable to people when they're from the Midwest. If you saw a Packer hat, you know, out in New Jersey, you knew you could strike up a conversation with that person that would last you until your bus arrived.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Aaron, that was so sweet. You've got to be from the Midwest because somebody said something nice out in New Jersey. any comment on that, Paul?
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, there are a lot of times where I'm out here where people are like, you're not from here, are you? Mm-hmm. And I'll say, no, I actually grew up in Iowa. And they said, oh, yeah, I kind of thought that you at least weren't from the East Coast. When my wife and I lived in Boston, we used to get that all the time. I mean, I came to love Boston, but Boston might be the most provincial of, like, any city in the world. It took, you know, a good maybe almost 2 years of us living there before we were sort of welcomed by people. And then they were, and then it was, you know, then there was no end to the invitations. But for a while, it was like, you're not from here, are you? And there was a little bit of a distance.
I'm thinking about the first time one of the first times I went to New York. I was, you know, it was many, many, many years ago, but I was afraid that all these rude New Yorkers were going to, you know, yell at me or, you know, run me over in the streets or something. And I couldn't get over how nice everybody was. They saw me looking at a map, you know, and they knew I was a lost tourist, and they would come over and say, hey, you know, there's the Empire State Building or whatever. They approached me and were very helpful and very kind and just totally against the stereotype.
Yeah, so I actually interned at ESPN when I was just out of college, and toward the end of my internship, my mom came out to visit me. She's a big theater nerd, and so we went to some Broadway shows. And afterward, after one of them, we were walking back, and I got lost. what my mom remembered more than even the police officer who gave us directions was the manner in which he gave the directions. He just said, okay, you take 45th Street down here, you hang a right. And it was very direct. He didn't want to chit-chat. And my mom tried to do a little bit of that. Oh, thank you. You know, have you been here long? He's like, lady, I gotta go. But you know, it was like he said what he needed to say. He was helpful to the extent of which it would help us, and then he had to go on about his day.
And there's that bluntness, but it's not. Yeah, it wasn't mean. It was just blunt.
He wasn't mean. But yeah.
so we're all nice in our own ways, but we express it in different ways.
Yeah, I think that's probably a big chunk of it, right? Mm-hmm. I just think that there's. To go back to Fargo, what I love is that it's not so much even a movie as it is some sort of anthropological document, because it's showing the ways in which an entire civilization interacts with one another. And the show, I think, captures that really well, too. Its first season, I was reading about it a little bit. I didn't know this at the time, but it got 18 Emmy nominations, which was more than any series in FX history. And FX, you know, has the American Horror franchise and a couple other shows that have done really well, critically acclaimed. But Fargo got more. And I think, again, that it got more because it's not only about trying to advance whatever narrative of murder and solving that murder, but it's not only about any of the more ancillary subplot points of, you know, character development among a man and his wife, or whatever it would be, a son and daughter. But it's about just getting even the smaller interactions, the ones just between the everyday encounters, and getting the pattern of speech right and getting the subtlety right. And that's what really drives it ahead. And that's why I love it. And I think that is the distinction. The way we feel compelled to be nice to each other in really any encounter, however small.
We are talking with Paul Kix, who is a senior editor at ESPN, the magazine. And he wrote a recent piece for Thrillist called Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. We're talking about what it's like to be Midwest nice, what Midwest nice is, to be sincere, to be unboastful, to be subtle. But our guest is saying there's also a dark side too, one of some tension and repression from opinions and feelings gone unexpressed. We wonder how you observe Midwest nice. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So are you from Wisconsin or the Midwest? Or did you move here from somewhere else? Do you recognize the personality traits, the values that are sometimes called Midwest nice? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What does Midwest nice mean to you? Rich in Rhinelander is with us. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I'm loving the stories, but I'm here to talk about the dark side. The first American author to win the Nobel Prize in Literature was Sinclair Lewis, after he had written Babbitt and probably more famously for most people, Elmer Gantry. And the Midwest generates a lot of art out of this tension. F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby is about a Midwesterner going to New York, and he's sort of naively in love with the wealth of the East Coast. I think it is no accident that some of the most segregated parts of the country, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, think of themselves as Midwest nice, because they don't necessarily know how to mix it up in the way that people on the coast do. And I think there is a dark side that hasn't been talked about.
I think that's absolutely true. I couldn't agree more. I mean, there is absolutely a tension there. I grew up in Iowa, a place that was overwhelmingly, I would say up to probably 98% in my county, white, Protestants, even. Like, there wasn't even a Catholicism, there wasn't a Jewish community or anything else. Part of what I love about the East Coast is just the mix and match of people, of ideas, and trying to live harmoniously in that. That's actually what I love, too, about the South. I lived in Dallas for about 5 years, and you see... I wasn't too far from a mosque. My wife is African American. I mean, you see a mix and match of a lot of different people that you don't find in the Midwest. And there is a certain naivete about growing up in the Midwest. I agree with that completely. But there is also, I think, as the caller said, I think that's absolutely right, that there is a sense we pat ourselves on the back for our kindness to others, but do we always extend that kindness to people who perhaps are not like us? I mean, my wife, the first time she went to Iowa, was very nervous because she was going somewhere where there was no one who looked like her. I mean, absolutely no one. To my family's credit, they treated her with open arms, but that apprehension didn't really leave until we boarded the flight again. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, a listener writes, although I wonder, we're friendly, but for outsiders, is it really easy to truly get to know a Midwesterner?
Well,
let me just finish this where he writes, I've heard complaints that Midwesterners are drawn to other Midwesterners because of a lot of what we're talking about. Is it really that easy to get to know us? It's sort of similar to what we're seeing a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, a great example is actually... my buddy Joe, who is at Thrillist and who assigned me this story, Bostonian through and through. I mean, literally a redheaded Irishman, or I should say of Irish Catholic descent. And Joe, when he went to Minneapolis recently, was like, I just couldn't believe how seemingly unfriendly everyone was, because I came with my Boston accent and I didn't look like... And he said, I didn't look like any of you pasty-skinned people. I was a pasty-skinned person.
Maybe that's why they got a little testy with him.
Yeah. But, you know, so I think the previous caller is absolutely true, and this is my defense of the Midwest. There is, at the same time, I say in the story, there is a continuity of compassion that extends throughout our history. Iowa in the antebellum era was the only state aside from Maine to say that they would not segregate their schools. There was a president from Illinois who ended slavery. From 1880s to roughly 1920, the state of Wisconsin executed a series of labor laws without sort of the fiery anarchy that you saw in Chicago that basically put in place a New Deal before FDR could do the New Deal himself. And then in the modern era, there is Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, passing gay rights laws well before the progressive movements in New York and California could do the same. So I think that there is, you know, this comes back to what we were saying just in the last segment. There is a bit of conflicting truths to any one truth. There are the endless iterations to any one moment in the Midwest. And I'm glad that caller brought that up because that's absolutely true. But, of course, there is another side to that as well.
Yeah. The Boston accent reminded me of when I took a trip to Boston for a public radio conference one year, and I met some producers from Boston talking about some shows that were produced out there. And I introduced myself, and they said, oh, we can tell you're from Wisconsin from your accent, they said in their Boston accent. It was pretty funny. Well, let me take another call. We have Chris in Madison with us. Hello, Chris.
Good morning. While I'm not a fan of his, when I look at families, I've just lost count of the number of times I've quoted Garrison Keillor's line that in Los Angeles, people get mad at each other and they start shooting. Up here, we're so much more civilized, we just don't talk to each other for 30 years.
That's some of that repression or grudges, yeah.
Yeah, that's the repression, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks.
And, I had one other thing, though. I find that most people in the workplace, people tend to be stoic, the word that hasn't come up yet, and just work a day. And people from the East Coast come here, and they kind of go crazy because I think they want action. While they tend to mistake movement for action, yet our work ethic is just having a Midwestern address on your resume is a big plus for employers because we get things done.
What about that?
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, ESPN is a place where you see people from all over the country, frankly, all over the world. And the stoicism that you, I have some people who work with me at the magazine who are from Minneapolis, Kansas City, a couple other people from Iowa that I know. And we just do our work and we don't complain. there are people in the office from the East or West Coast who do their work a bit more with a bit more volume than perhaps than we do. I will say, however, that the Midwestern work ethic that is as deeply ingrained as Midwest nice is also a little bit of a farce, I think, because I can't tell you the number of native New Yorkers who work just extremely long hours and are deeply passionate about things. I can't. I have so many friends from Boston who are deeply committed to, you know, not only their day jobs, but social causes, things that have nothing to do with them, but they just deeply care about and they want to right wrongs. I think, you know, my parents are always quick to say, well, I'm sure you're one of the hardest workers there because, you know, I'm the son of a farmer and a teacher. And I like to think that, yeah, I do work hard, but you know, I'm far from the only one in that office who works that way.
Yeah, and does Midwestern nice possibly transfer to the workplace in that we aim to please our supervisors and fellow employees, and we're just trying to be nice and you know, get along with everybody?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I think there's a lot of people. I've had a lot of success at ESPN, in part just because of the way I was raised in Iowa, and you know, the work ethic that was instilled in me, and to do the work and to do it well and to not be boastful about it. If there is a flip side to that, I would say that sometimes there's a bit of martyrdom that sets in because you do the work, you do it well, and sometimes when it goes unnoticed, you take on more work, and perhaps that goes without comment or without some sort of pay raise or bonus or whatever the case may be. And so
then you're simmering and repressed. And
yeah. So it's sort of, so, you know, one of the things, I was just talking about this with a colleague of mine a couple of days ago. One of the things that I've learned in the past few years is the old cliche to work smart and not just work smart as much as you're working hard. And as hard as it is to make people above me aware when it's necessary that, you know, hey, I did this or I did a good job here, or sometimes even more painfully to say to people above me, you know, hey, this is a lot for me to take on. Are we sure that we want that I should be doing all of this? Or, you know, I don't like this, which is equally as hard to say. Is it concerns like the Midwestern work ethic?
I was hoping that somebody was going to call in with, and somebody did right away and then dropped off, and I was waiting for somebody to call back. Somebody who said that they moved here from New York, and they did not see the Midwest nice that we are talking about. And I believe, putting words in this caller's mouth, that they sensed a tension over politics in this state. And that is going on right now. We have a very politically divided state. Is Midwest nice changing because of the political climate?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Oh, so I'm a pretty liberal guy. A lot of my family members on my dad's side are pretty conservative, and we always got along. We still do get along. However, it was very so. This is going to kind of maybe take the conversation in a slightly different direction. But after the shooting in Newtown, which is about 45 minutes from where I live, I went on Facebook. Just say this is ridiculous, and I believe we don't need these semi-automatic weapons. And there, my friends from the East Coast were, you know,
agreeing, liking, whatever the case may be. My own family, a lot of my family members from Iowa, were the most strongest in opposition. And this is actually where they abandoned their Midwestern knife and just put it in very blunt terms why I was wrong. We had a bit of a row over that, at least online. And in the time since I've gone back home to for holidays or whatever, we actually don't discuss it. I don't know if that's just the I don't know if that's a repression or we're just deciding that that's not something we want to discuss. That's a great question. I really don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, and maybe we can do another article another time on how Midwest Nice is evolving, if it is. Angie in Whitewater is with us. Hi, Angie.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the Midwest Nice. I teach at UW-Whitewater, and I teach culture classes to international students. And they really notice how friendly everybody is. I have a diverse set of students. We've had students from Brazil, China, Korea, India, France, all in the same classroom together. And they do notice how friendly the campus is, how nice everyone is. And for spring break, a group of them went to New York. And they came back and said, oh, it's very different there. Yeah, you know, it's not as friendly as it is here. So I think internationally, at least, we are perceived, at least in Whitewater, as being very friendly. And the students really enjoy that.
Yeah, how about that, Paul?
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm writing a book that took me to France to do some reporting and research, and also to England, and I saw a lot of the same things. Even in France, they were saying, "What part of the United States are you from?" Because I think they probably have a lot of encounters with New Yorkers, or you know, some other East Coasters. And I would say I'm originally from Iowa, and they seem to understand. Then I think that's absolutely true.
What's your book on?
It's on a French resistance fighter who, an aristocrat from the fourth oldest family in France, who escaped from the Nazis three times and worked for a secret British organization called SOE, which was Churchill formed to bring down the Nazis. And it's actually SOE was in part the inspiration for Ian Fleming when he wrote James Bond.
Wow,
so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, very nice. Let's in previous generations we grew up, we stayed in one place. Now it seems we're much more mobile. And we move around a lot as more and more Midwestern transplants put down roots here, there, and everywhere, and native Midwesterners head out to other parts of the country. Do you think Midwest Nice will fundamentally change in the future?
That's another great question. I think it probably will. I think that, and I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, one of the previous callers who was talking about the dark side, about the, in some respects, if you're not part of our group, we're nice to everybody in our group, but perhaps not as kind to those outside of it. I think as the Midwesterners move about, and I think as more people move to the Midwest, you're going to see just a better mix of ideas, you know, different cultures, different races. And I at least firmly believe that that's the best way to live anyway. So I think it's for the better.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Paul Kick, senior editor at ESPN, the magazine. He's also written for New York, Men's Journal, Wall Street Journal. He wrote a recent piece for The Thrillist called Midwestern Nice, a tribute to a sincere and suffocating way of life. He grew up in Iowa. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thanks to Chris Molina for on-air direction and to Cheryl Gasser for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow, it's the Week in Review. We'll have two guests from opposing viewpoints discussing and debating the top news headlines of the week. It's the Week in Review, reviewing all the top stories in state and national politics tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.